Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now, please join me in welcoming my co-host, a woman who's going to go to Cleveland to fill the void left by LeBron James, Stafford Palmieri.
Hello, hello.
How are you, Stafford?
I mean, should I hold a press conference to announce, an hour-long press conference on primetime TV to announce that I'm going to Cleveland to fill in said void?
I think you should. I think that's a great idea. Hey, look, you got to give LeBron. I mean, here's the deal, right? They got this salary cap in the NBA, So he can't make the bazillions of dollars he's worth. So he's got to make that money some other way. And having an hour-long announcement on primetime television is one good way to do it.
I mean, the man has an ego the size of the moon.
Oh, come on. I don't think that's... Look, I mean, they've got to look and say, look, these baseball players are making hundreds of millions of dollars a year.
That's true.
You know, I mean, he's vastly underpaid.
It is.
They've got to recoup in other ways.
Which is all relative, of course. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is smart to be playing the game in terms of making more money that way, yeah. Since he can't do it.
I mean, it's just like the moonlighting that you do because you're vastly underpaid here at Fordham. I mean, it's the same kind of principle. Just kidding. All right. Well, and by the way, did you watch the World Cup final?
I did.
Yeah,
I did.
We were just talking about the chest kick that was not called.
The chest kick and how there were other yellow cards that were very much less egregious.
Yeah.
It's the
arbitrary and capricious calls in soccer. You know, that is one of the challenges to having the sport really take off here. In the U.S.
It is really violent, though. My mom has never really watched a soccer game. She came in and watched part of it with me while I was working on State of State Standards reviews during the World Cup, of course.
Yes.
And she was like, are they grabbing each other and punching each other in the head? And I was like, yes, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty much.
Without any pads. Okay,
right,
good. Well, hopefully there'll be no punching or grabbing here today, but you never know because it's going to get pretty heated with the debates that we've got coming at you. We're going to start with Pardon the Gadfly, then we're going to have Amber's Research Minute. Are we giving you an extra 30 seconds this week, Amber? Maybe a little, maybe a few extra seconds this time. And then Daniela will rate that reform. So let's get started. We've got intern Kyle here to help us play Pardon the Gadfly.
The Gates Foundation funds nearly everything and everyone in education. Numerous former Gates staffers have joined the Federal Education Department. Gates funded states to work on their Race to the Top applications. Just last weekend, Bill Gates himself gave a speech at the AFT convention. Is the Gates Foundation getting too powerful?
Okay, now keep in mind that this show is funded in part by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Nah, just kidding.
We're part of the everything and everyone.
Along with everything else in this town, education related. Look, you know, there was a front page Washington Post story on the Gates Foundation the other day. I mean, those of us that follow this, it's no surprise. We know everybody we know is getting money from Gates. Practically, they are funding everything. And they certainly helped to set the agenda. There's no doubt about it. I just noticed that the NGA, the chairman of their of the NGA this year, the governor, has embraced getting more people to graduate from college as his goal for the year. And I noticed that that is exactly what the Gates Foundation is pushing and what the Obama administration is pushing. I mean, there's – so, yes. On the other hand, is this all bad? I mean – you know, we have this situation where for many years, the education system, that there was a hegemonic power in education in the form of the teachers' unions. And now we have the Gates Foundation playing in some ways a balancing act, also being able to throw around some weight with its money. And it's, you know, for the cause of reform, mostly good. But, you know, I think we should keep our eye on whether or not this organization is you know, either on purpose or inadvertently stymieing criticism, because that would be very unhealthy.
I agree with everything you said, and the one thing I'd add to that is that Gates funds so many things that they can't all be in line with the same I mean, I feel like there's so many priorities that there's a point where the left and the right hand are not going to know what the other is doing. And while I want to say, actually, it was Gates that funded an AFT program a couple months ago, and I think we even talked about it on the podcast, but at some point, you know, it's not just... no damage done when Gates is funding initiatives that are working against reform. It's that you can't streamline all of your priorities when it comes to giving this money away. And there has to be some kind of conflict of interest here where Gates is just funding too many things.
Okay, topic number two, Kyle. Oh, by the way, you all notice that this is intern Kyle, and yet it's a woman.
And I know. It's all the androgynous names we have in this office.
That's right.
Now.
Stafford, Kyle, people are very confused. Stafford, always people think that you're a guy until they see you in person or something. Although your email tag is Stafford Olivia.
On purpose.
Palmieri, very nicely. Kyle, do you have to do that sometimes too? Use a middle name to make sure.
Unfortunately, my middle name doesn't help out because it's Francis, spelled with an I.
boy, what were your parents thinking? I tell you, were they? They weren't
hoping
for
your parents and my parents should have a powwow.
And you should know that Kyle stars in a new video up on the Flypaper blog that gets into the education systems of the Netherlands. You should check that out. Okay, topic number two.
The Minneapolis Federation of Teachers has announced it will apply to become a charter school authorizer. Is this a conflict of interest or a smart idea?
I'm going to go with conflict of interest for two reasons. One is that charters are based on... particularly, well, one of the main aspects of charters is that they get to circumvent union rules. So it simply doesn't make sense that a union would authorize a charter school and have, and this part of the story here is that the MFT wants to have unionized teachers in its charter schools. So ostensibly, they would not really have the firing and hiring and autonomy control over personnel in these schools that they want to authorize. And the second piece would be that unions represent the labor force, and now they are moving into management. So this is going to be a really interesting, shifting of perspective. Maybe it'll be an opportunity to learn lessons for them of how hard it really is to be in a management perspective and not be representing employees.
Right. I mean, look, I can understand that people may look at this and be skeptical and say, okay, what are they up to here? What's their real agenda? And there are some risks. I mean, can you imagine as a charter school authorizer, the union shutting down a school that is staffed by its own members? But I also think that this could be an interesting experiment. I don't know enough about this particular union to know if they're likely to be coming at this for the right reasons. But, you know, Minnesota has a history, a tradition of having these teacher-owned charter schools, these teacher cooperatives. This is another form of that, of saying, look, that the teachers are really in charge of this. And, just as with the UFT charter schools in New York City, I think having a union play this role as an authorizer is something that's, worth watching.
I agree.
Okay. Stafford, we're supposed to be like kicking and
grabbing.
Well,
I agree it's worth watching.
Punching.
I agree it's worth watching. I don't think it's a good idea, but I agree it's worth watching.
All right. I might try to chest kick you in this next one. Okay. Kyle, topic number three.
A school district in Texas tried to keep 17 seniors from dropping out by having them withdraw and enroll in an online school weeks before graduation. Is the district trying to circumvent the system or do right by its students?
All right, now Stafford, give a little bit of the backstory here.
Sure.
What was going on? These kids had failed the tax test and thus were not going to get a diploma?
Right, so they had all their credits, but they'd failed the tax test, and you can't get a diploma in Texas without taking and passing, obviously, the tax test. So they were going to be counted as dropouts by the district, which would impact, of course, how the school was graded, et cetera. So they wanted these kids to withdraw and enroll in a online cyber school in Pennsylvania. The cyber school had agreed to pick up the tab, so it wasn't going to cost. I'm not exactly sure how that worked. I think that the school is not a public school, but that this cyber school agreed to pick up the tabs. It wasn't going to cost taxpayers anything. And ultimately, actually, what wound up happening was these kids didn't get in because the district they were coming from, the academic standards were not as rigorous as this cyber school. And the cyber school was like, well, these kids can't actually do the work here, so we can't actually let them in. So now the kids are going to have to take the tax again. And if they fail this summer, then basically they can either get a GED or they can go into an associate's degree program at a community college, but they can't actually get the associate's degree until they pass the tax, nor do they qualify for financial aid. So it's really sort of the tax test is the make or break here.
All right. So part of this is it's a story that illustrates some of what's going on around the world of dropout recovery, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got these situations where there's kids, either because they don't have enough credits or in this case, they're not passing the graduation test where they're not getting across the finish line and there's some use of online learning to get them there. On the one hand, this could be positive. We're giving kids new options. I mean, we don't want, we want kids to be able to move on and be successful. On the other hand, it might be just circumventing standards, both for the kids and for the schools themselves. And this is an area that is, there's not a lot of clarity. It's a little bit of a Wild West area right now, too.
I think there's something to be said for what the tax means and maintaining the meaning of a diploma. And the whole point here is that you can't have a diploma until you pass the tax. And, employers know that and colleges know that, et cetera. Yeah. And they are trying to circumvent that. So,
yeah, I say, if they can't pass the tax, maybe they can pass the GED. And that's what they've got to do in this case. Okay, that's all the time we have for Pardon the Gadfly. Kyle, thank you. Excellent job. reading those questions. It is now everyone's favorite time of the show, Amber's Research Minute. You know, you do have the grooviest music to go along with your segment.
It is pretty groovy.
I have a little bit of a stomach ache. I just ate, Mike brought us in Ben and Jerry's for our listeners who don't know that, and I just had peanut butter and raspberry ice cream, a big, huge cup of it. And I
heard it tasted like peanut butter and jelly.
Me and lactose don't, you know. Oh. Anyway, TMI, but let us go on.
so this might be Amber's research 10 seconds, depending on how things go.
I guess you won't be able to chest kick anyone at the table now, Mike.
All right, Amber, what are we talking about today?
All right, so this week we have the latest in a long line of charter school impact studies. This one came out last week. It was conducted by Mathematica. It's a multi-state randomized study. It compares 2 years of academic performance from students who were lotteried in and lotteried out of 36 middle school charters in 15 states. So these were schools that held lotteries in 04, 05, and 05, 06. The key finding, on average, charter middle schools perform roughly the same as their district counterparts in reading and math, though the performance varies widely, which is always the case in these studies. But here's the important nuance. Charter middle schools serving low-income or low-performing students had significantly positive effects in math, while charters serving more affluent or higher-achieving students had significant negative effects in math. In reading, there were no effects for low income or low performing, but again, we see negative effects for the affluent kids. So bottom line, charter schools overall did not outperform traditional schools, but they often provide better alternatives for low income children. So compare this to last week's study, where we talked a little bit about voucher schools, because we were kind of thinking, how do these latest high profile studies stack up? And if you recall, vouchers last week helped graduation rates, but not achievement. So here this week, we're saying charters are helping disadvantaged students in math, but not in particular other groups. So the way I see it, both charters and vouchers have benefits. I mean, they're completely different benefits, and therefore, obviously, these were completely different study designs. But we see some benefit to both, because these were pretty rigorous studies and at the end of the day.
Okay. Now, see, this is interesting, and I think not surprising to say that these middle-class charter schools have lower performance than district counterparts, because I suspect you look at a lot of these middle-class charters, what they are more progressive, more project-based. Mm-hmm. You know, they are saying, look, the parents saying, look, what I've got, offered to me in the traditional public schools, which is probably, pretty good in terms of a standard education, is not what I want for my kid. I want something more alternative, more, maybe artsy or whatever. And guess what? Those schools don't focus on the kinds of things that get tested, and their kids score worse.
Right.
On the other hand, these schools serving low-income kids, the charters may be much more focused on trying to raise
basics.
Achievement and be the, the sort of, include certainly the KIPP middle schools and others that are really trying to raise the bar.
And the KIPP study, obviously, so that this follows up on the KIPP study, which showed, we had some real gains for those low income disadvantaged kids. So I think we're starting to see a little bit of pattern in all these charter studies, if we really dig in and kind of tear them, look at their component parts. So that's exciting.
I found the part that about how it had a significant negative impact on on affluent kids very interesting. And it kind of made me think what the future of charters will be down the line, if we really should be focusing on the inner city, low income, low performing charters or to the exclusion of everything else. I mean, should we not be promoting charter schools in other places, or should we let these charter schools open even when they're actually decreasing? I mean, it's not even like these kids are going to these schools and their achievement is flatlining. It's that their achievement is decreasing.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I read this study, And Fordham's review of it last week in the Gadfly was quite positive. But I read the study and came away with it feeling kind of negative about charter schools.
I think one take is that charter schools are closing the achievement gap. Wealthy kids are doing worse and poor kids are doing better.
Well, I mean, you think about Ohio, they're only allowed to open them in areas where, kids are already struggling and that sort of thing. So people
All right.
are already
So what up. Is the song that goes along
so
with
the
this?
Song, since charters are friends to some of our low-performing kids, we have James Taylor's You've Got a Friend.
Yes.
You just called up my name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come running.
The song just makes me want to, stick my arm out the window of the car.
Yeah.
Winter, spring, summer, or fall. Oh, sorry, the music's gone. You know, I got to go to a JT concert just 2 weeks ago.
Really?
With my wife, I did. It was awesome. It was with Carole King, who I'm starting to date myself now. I will say that my wife and I were among the youngest people in the audience. It was an older set.
Did Nico and Leandro accompany you?
No. Nico and Leandro had babysitter that night.
You had a baby-free night.
Yes. Very exciting. Okay, everybody, it is time for us to rate that reform. Well, this is a bittersweet segment this week because joining us is Daniela Fairchild. She has been with us here at Fordham for about the last
five or six months
as an intern and then as a... as a research assistant. She's been helping very much on a big report we've got coming out soon next week on state standards versus the Common Core, pulling some all-nighters on that. You're gonna miss us here at Fordham, Daniela?
I will.
I'm going to miss your late-night company in the office.
It's true. I don't know how Stafford does it. 9:30 p.m., the cleaning crews are gone. She's typing away.
Yeah.
It's creepy. They're ghosts.
Well, Daniela, okay, what reform are we going to rate today?
So for this week's Rate That Reform, we're going back to Cali. Had to, sorry. We're going to Los Angeles, to be precise. So we've all read about California's dismal budget situation that's left school districts across the state in pretty dire straits. But those around Hollywood have found a way to mitigate the negative effects of these budget shortcomings. They're renting out their schools to production companies that want to film movies, TV shows, commercials, etc. in a school setting. Predominantly, this is done through a film promotion nonprofit organization called Film LA. So Film LA works as sort of a middleman between production companies and public sector clients. They've even got a Match.com meets Craigslist type website called Loco Search, where potential clients can search through pictures of school cafeterias, classrooms, and even bathrooms, bizarre, to find the perfect site for filming. When a match is found through Film LA, the NPO gets a 16% commission, and the host school and district split the remaining profit 75-25. So districts are earning thousands of dollars a day renting out their space to the film industry. From July 2009 to March 2010, LAUSD pulled in $1.5 million through this endeavor. So pros, it's an ingenuitive way to pocket a little extra cash for schools and districts. So on that level, I salute the endeavor. But there are inevitable distractions that impede student learning when film crews are hanging out in the hallways. So my biggest qualm with the reform, though, is that it's acting as sort of a band-aid approach to schools around Hollywood. Instead of finding long-term solutions to their district's budget woes, and instead of changing schools' fiscal practices, they're grabbing any funds available, no matter how fickle. What happens when these schools' 15 minutes of fame are up? Where will the money come from then? So for the grade, I give the reform currently a B. But in the long term, their grade goes down to a D.
There you have it, Daniela. It's pretty smart, don't you think, Stafford? I mean, you know, what the heck? You've got film crews nearby. Why not?
I mean, now I'm thinking back to, you know, some of those, like, great, you know, James Bond scenes that happen in bathrooms and just wondering, like, which bathroom it happened. You know, so, for example, I was in England a couple years ago and I went into the college at Oxford where they filmed the Harry Potter, scenes in the dining room or whatever. And, you know, like, when you go into a bathroom, you never really think, you know, maybe this bathroom was featured in a film. It's just not, you don't think about bathroom scenes. They can be crucial to the plot.
You know, it makes me think about other places. This isn't too relevant to most places in the country that don't have Hollywood in their backyard. But I think about, you know, what other kinds of industries or partnerships could you have? I mean, you've got these school buildings that are basically empty, you know, in the evening and overnight and during, you know, big chunks of them during the summer. I just think, you know, what kinds of other stuff could you bring in there?
Well, some school districts actually use their schools as community centers.
Well, sure. So. Right. So that's already happening. Yeah.
Right.
All right, Daniela, thank you for bringing this news from the West Coast, and we will miss you.
Thanks much.
All right, until next week.
I'm Stafford Palmieri.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute's Education Gadfly Show, signing off.